This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kennison and Noel Lim. It's 6 o'clock in the morning, Wednesday the 10th of March, midway through yet another week. Honestly, time really does seem to fly these days. How are you both doing this morning?
I'm very good. I guess we're the midweek and so many exciting news, right? On Meghan Markle and of course some news around in our region.
Yes, all of that and more. And we will be covering that during, of course, during the 6 or 7. It's a time of the day where we kind of catch you up of what's been going on. And actually, while you talk about the interview, Noel, I actually found a few articles that talked about not the interview itself, but the interviewer. And I was reminded how powerful Oprah can be when she really puts her mind to it, right? Because she's very focused on the production stuff now. But you know, I mean, most people grew up in the 90s watching Oprah during lunchtime. So we're going to talk about that and how great interviews come to be, really. What is it, the interviewee, the interviewer, or a mix of both?
And of course, later on after the 6:45, we're also going to be looking at the front pages of our papers and portals. So if you want to weigh in on any of these conversations, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us over at BFM Radio. Your choice. Do weigh in on the conversation, though. We'd love to hear from you. Up next, though, we are looking at an interesting article out of the BBC Work Life talking about the concept of failing up. So be sure to stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was J-Boy by Phoenix, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So first up, this 6 o'clock hour, we are taking a look at an article in the BBC Work Life talking about failing up. So failing up is an interesting concept, right? It's basically the allowance that is given to people to fail at a particular task and yet still climb the corporate ladder. But it makes the distinction of the fact that only some people are allowed to fail without penalty consistently, while others maybe never get the chance. And it looks at, it's a very interesting dive into promotion practices and things like, I believe they call it like a cultural matching sometimes between leaders and the employees they choose to promote. Because it says here that, you know, if you perhaps are the same race, gender, personality perhaps as the person that you might be looking to promote, you maybe might be more inclined to promote them instead of someone who is very different from you but has better results. What do you both think of this morning?
Yeah, so when I first saw the title and the subtitle, right, so when I think about failing up, I think it's very important actually executives are, or managers or even associates are given the opportunity to fail up, meaning you, as you work your way up the ladder in the corporate world, you are given maybe bigger projects, riskier projects. This is a chance to really sharpen your skills as a manager and as or maybe a technical person, because that's very necessary. Once you get to the top, you are going to be taking more risk, right? So you need to learn how to fail in order to progress. So I think if someone has failed in the project while moving upwards, but if he or she had demonstrated excellent management skills, or maybe there was a lot of factors beyond that person's control, and it seems like promoting him further upwards makes sense, then I think that it does encourage people to take more risk in the organization. I think that's always healthy. But, you know, when there are cases where the person moves up because, you know, he's actually not very, you know, that competent or that outstanding, but he's very good at towing the line, not questioning the status quo, you know, just not arguing back, just, you know, following whatever the boss says, you know.
Or very good at charming the right people.
Yeah, or you know, you don't agree, but you just follow along because, you know, that's the way to just move yourself up the organization, right? And that obviously is the start of a very toxic organization. And then, of course, there are also the other kind of people who are very overconfident, they brand themselves, they're a good talker, but and you see their work, they're only so-so. But because they're such good talkers, you kind of think, oh, wow, he's so competent. And it comes back to the point, your point that you raised just now, because there will be some people who won't get that kind of chance. And this might be like people in the minority who are not so like, you know, they're not like the majority, how the majority looks in an organization. And so, for example, well, I guess in America might be, you know, people of color, for example. Yeah. So, and in Malaysia, it could also be, you know, someone in the minority group or majority group.
Yeah. I mean, there are structural issues at play, irrespective of the where you are, right? There will always be some group that has an advantage or not. And beyond that, when we talk about the situation around perceived overconfidence or the ability to talk someone up, things like that, charisma and all these things are actually values, right? These are things that people want to have. And acknowledging my own, level of privilege, or even the fact that I'm a male brought up in a world that was always instructed me and told me that I needed to be certain things, I was always aware of the fact that you needed to brand yourself a certain way. You need to be able to, you need to exude confidence even when you're not that confident. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to talk to everybody, not just the people that you need to talk to. It was always instilled in me, maybe because my dad's a corporate comms guy and my mom's also a very sociable individual. So these were skill sets that were thought to me, and even not just me, but my sister as well. We were both, we are both very sociable people who can, know how to communicate with others. And this is a very important skill set, because you can be the most technical person in the room, but if you don't know how to communicate that technicality and that intelligence, no one's ever going to know. This is unfortunately the sad truth of the situation. Yes, in an ideal world, we would have a purely meritocratic system that put us in positions that suited our needs and our skill sets, but that's not how it is, because the world is a messy place.
But it's also a question of, you know, when you say a meritocratic system, it's also a question sometimes of what that particular hiring manager views as merit, right?
What is value, yeah.
Correct. Because, it's an interesting, charisma's an interesting question. So at least, you know, my upbringing was a little bit different from yours. I was actually told as a child, as a, like an 11-year-old, oh, you shouldn't come off too strong because then you're going to frighten off any potential husbands. I was told that. And I just ignored it. But, you know, but in the workplace sometimes, what do you really prioritize? Do you prioritize someone who gets things done but perhaps trods on toes on the way? Or do you prioritize someone who is who maybe doesn't have all the best results, but has the kind of personality to bring people together? I think that can be very subjective and dependent on the organization and down to the individual. So I'm curious as to what people might think, or what is the most important value that they look at when they're looking at a potential hire.
Yeah, so when you look at a potential hire, the job scope may be of a certain kind of scope and certain kind of temperament and skills. But once the person come in, and 5 years down the road, they may be thinking of moving him up, then you may require someone with a different temperament, a different kind of attitude, and the willingness to take on management roles. So then that kind of thing is quite different already. Mm-hmm. Your merit, whatever is counted as merit, is different. So I guess as a person who's trying to rise up the ladder, is to just be conscious about that you sometimes have to adapt to the situation. And of course, as a manager, you got to be, you know, you have to look out for your unconscious bias, right? Do you have a certain bias
Yes.
against certain people?
And that's why you have processes and protocols in place, right? So that not everything is it's important to have the qualitative element to have the human element of your judgment, but you have to be able to back that up with some kind of quantitativeness, right? Unfortunately, sometimes we also take the quantitative elements a bit too far, because there are jobs that don't have quantitative or strong quantitative mm-hmm. elements to their KPI, which can affect the way you view or value someone in the company. Whether it's if it's a sales job, it's very easy to value that, to assess the performance, right? But there are more creative elements. There are operational elements and administrative work also that is undervalued. And this all plays into the whole situation. But again, I think, Noel, as you pointed out, it comes back to how we define value and what is the metrics that we want, because that in itself then defines what is failing up as opposed to not failing up, right? As opposed to actually progressing through the ranks.
So let us know what you think about this, about the discussion that we've had so far this morning. You can WhatsApp us over at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now, though, we're going to head into some messages, and then we're looking at the art of a great TV interview. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was The Beat Goes On by Sonny and Cher. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Brushen and Noel. Now, we're looking at another article this morning, following up from the, well, groundbreaking. Well, groundbreaking, certainly.
Newsmaking.
Newsmaking interview between Oprah Winfrey and the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, Meghan and Prince Harry. And this is, you know, the international news has been abuzz with this. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, some of the revelations that had come out of it. But a lot of the articles since have looked at how Oprah conducted the interview itself. So this one in BBC Culture looks at just that, how the landmark TV interviews of the past couple of decades really made their mark and the styles that went into it. And it's very interesting because, you know, it's TV, it's entertainment. So there is a performative element to most of these interviews. But yet there is, in many of these cases also, there is, you know, there's a journalistic element to it as well. And decisions, editorial decisions that went into how it eventually, it was portrayed when it eventually hit screens. Noel, I know you've been following this saga quite closely. What did you think about what we have managed to see of the interview?
Oh, I think the interview was wonderful, right? Of course, with two, you know, very important people, very lovely people, and they were very open about sharing their experiences. And of course, Oprah, I mean, she's the master, right? I mean, and I think she really brings her trademark, and it's something that she's very consistent with. I think she tries to be balanced. She's very compassionate yet firm. I think even during the interview, she would follow up on certain aspects to try to narrow down or to get, you know, to be very specific, like, for example, the comments about racism or suggestions of racism. And Oprah then would circle back to Harry, or, you know, to clarify some things. And of course, some people would say, oh, Oprah didn't push her hard enough on some things, like, for example, Markle's claim that she didn't know much about the palace, she didn't know much about Harry. A lot of people seem to disbelieve that, and they felt maybe Oprah should have pushed her harder enough. But you know what? I think when you are the presenter, and we all have this experience, right? When you are just talking to the guests, you just go with the flow, and just sometimes you have to make that split second decision. Do you go down this path or do you go down that path?
There is no perfect interview, right? End of the day, and we all have experience in this room. There will be people who love the interviews you do, and the people who maybe don't love it as much, or have constructive or non-constructive criticism about the angles you took or the questions you, and that's the life of an interviewer. It's always going to be that. And I think we got to acknowledge the fact that, I mean, Oprah, the only reason Oprah could do an interview like this is because she's Oprah, right? Mm-hmm. Who else would have got this kind of access and the ability to ask these hard questions?
She was a guest at their wedding, by
yeah,
the way.
So there
and
is a certain
like
level.
Two, 3 doors down
she's
the
a
road.
Neighbor or something like that. So there is a certain level of privilege and access to this, but that does not take away from her interviewing style. Those follow-ups you pointed out, Noel, are very powerful. She asked follow-ups in such a, the words you used was compassionate but firm. That's exactly how to describe it, right? She's very empathetic, but not complacent in her follow-ups. She wants details. But of course, there are times where you've got to let it go. You've got to read the room. We're not in the room where the conversation is happening. So we don't know exactly what kind of chemistry, what kind of body language was being, that Oprah was seeing. But also on the production side, the producers behind it in the cinematography in terms of when to put what reactions in was masterclass. I'm sure everyone has seen the clip of Oprah saying what in response to Meghan's comments about people asking or certain of the institution asking about the potential color of the baby's, her future baby's or then future baby's skin. That gives you such a powerful reaction, which I think permeates in societies and cultures, or at least countries like UK and the US, very much so now, especially after Black Lives Matter and George Floyd last year.
Yes. So Oprah very effectively straddles the line between being an incisive interviewer and being an audience stand-in, right? Because when
That's a perfect way to describe it, actually. An audience stand-in, right? To make us feel like
that disbelief, you know?
Exactly.
She was a voice for it.
That's how I would react.
Exactly.
That, you know,
yeah. So this is an interesting article too, because it looks at other major interviews that have had lasting repercussions. So one of them, of course, the last royal interview back in 1995 was Martin Bashir's interview with Lady Diana Spencer, you know, late Princess Diana. And So his style of it was basically to sit back and let her tell her story, because she came to him ready to tell her story. And they contrast this and, of course, the current royal interview between Oprah, Meghan and Harry, and the Frost and Nixon interview right after the Watergate scandal. And this is... So David Frost's tack was to come to it with reams and reams of facts to push back against Richard Nixon and basically give him enough rope to hang himself with.
That oddly sounds a little bit like the Breakfast Grill, right? just ask questions and then point back with data and see where the conversation goes. It may not be all grills, but you know, certain people of accountability, that's the way to do the interview. Right? Because it also matters what's the purpose of the interview and what are you providing to the stakeholders involved. If you're holding the interviewee accountable, then the questions change. But if you're trying to get a story, if you're trying to empathize, if you're trying to get information, then a softer touch to disarm and then, well, mine information is the better way to go about it.
Yeah, I think it should somehow achieve a lot of objectives. There has to be some accountability. At the same time, it's the approach, right? Balanced, compassionate, firm. But I think really it's also up to the presenter to define. And it's a style that they must be comfortable with. Do you want to go through the hard talk way? Then you better be, you know, comfortable seeing your face in the mirror every day. Or you want to go the softer touch, but, you know, firm. But, you know, will this interview bring down the institution, this Meghan Markle's interview? Maybe not, but it's certainly a landmark interview.
Yes, indeed. And do let us know as well what you think following this. What to you makes a great interview and interviewer? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We're about to head into the 6:30 news bulletin and here to take you there is some music, Stuck With You by Huey Lewis and the News, BFM 89.9. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So we are taking a look at news on the international front. And first up is a statement out of the World Health Organization. So this is from their chief scientist, Dr. Soumya Swaminathan. And she came out to say that, you know, around the world, we all really need to ramp up efforts to combat COVID-19. Countries must not let their guards down because, and I quote, we're at a very risky period. So she pointed out that after, I think, 6 consecutive weeks of declines in cases, last week across the globe, COVID-19 cases increased. More than 2.6 million new cases were reported in the last week of February, up 7%. And I guess this is something that we're seeing here, we saw here a little bit as well, right? After a prolonged lockdown, people get tired and perhaps people get a little bit complacent.
Yes, I think across the world, the SOPs have been relaxed, right? So I think people are just coming out and, you know, making up for lost time and all that pent-up demand. Even in Malaysia, I see like many restaurants, the popular ones are full. So I guess people are taking advantage of the situation. Just looking at how actually, so I think it's definitely call pace to be not complacent because the pace of vaccination is actually still, well, you know, I can't say whether it's slow or too fast. But across the world, I think there's some reports here. Israel, for example, have vaccinated almost 100% of their population. UAE is also quite ahead. 63 out of 100 people have been vaccinated and UK is about 35, US is 27. In this region, Singapore, 10 out of 100 have been vaccinated. In Malaysia, 1 out of 100. So, hopefully we can ramp up our pace in Malaysia.
Yeah, but on the plus side, though, if I take a look at the global situation in terms of cases, it is on a downward trajectory. This is on the weekly averages. It peaked in on January 4th, the week of January 4th. There was 5 million cases confirmed that week. But now we are at 2.75 million. It's coming down, but it did spike up a little bit from 2 weeks ago. But I think we're starting to see the passing the peak globally, or at least in specific geographies, we're seeing that happen. So I think, you know, there's a bit less lethargy over the situation because they're now seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. The vaccine rollouts are beginning to happening across the world. But the WHO is just emphasizing the important point that it, don't let up, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't get complacent and continue the focus on the rollout and essentially keeping that curve flat and don't spike up another inflammation of the cases, right? You don't want to see that. And then we go into a whole other, we go back a few months.
Yes, absolutely. Because nobody wants another lockdown at the end of the day. The faster we can all, if we can all comply with this to the best extent of our abilities right now and completely flatten this curve, well, so much the better, right? Vaccinations are also rolling onwards. And we're going to be talking about this a little bit later. Selangor's COVID-19 vaccination rate with Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, who's the chair of the Selangor Task Force on COVID-19. That's happening later, about 7:45. But in the meantime, just taking a look at another piece of news, South Korea has seen its ruling Democratic Party leader resign from the post that he's held for the past 7 months. And this, there's speculation that this is on the back of a possible bid to succeed the current South Korean president, Moon Jae-in, in the presidential election, which is slated for 2022. So Lee Nak-yeon is a top contender in the progressive camp. He said yesterday he'd resign, which is a prerequisite under the party's constitution, saying any leaders intending to run in the presidential primary must resign all posts at least a year beforehand.
Yeah, some background information about him. He was prime minister from 2017 to 2020. And I think during his tenure, even as a politician, as a legislator, he's helped to pass more than 400 laws, including key reforms involving corruption investigations. So he seems to be, comes across as a reformist.
Yeah, and on the other side, no top contender has reportedly come out just yet from the Conservative opposition. Although former Prosecutor General Yoon Seok-yeol has seen his support rate climb after a protracted battle with Moon about stripping prosecutors of investigative powers. The clash resulted in Yoon resigning last week in protest, and seemingly the public siding with him, or at least that's what opinion surveys seem to indicate. So this will be an interesting one to watch next year. 2022 is next year, right? Yes, it is.
Out of 2020.
Yeah, it's just time has all just merged into one.
2020 just
construct.
Disappeared into the ether.
Yeah, so that will be interesting to watch. But also, while we're talking about the Asian region, I just want to quickly talk. I saw this article in the FT about Admiral Philip Davidson, who's the head of Indo-Pacific Command for the US, basically saying what I think a lot of people have been talking about for a while, that the US's military might in the region is dwindling in comparison to China's, and that is going to pose its own concerns for their security interests in the longer term. Whether the Biden administration changes this, we'll have to wait and see. They seem to be focused on the whole the diplomacy thing for now.
I mean, it's going to affect more than just the US's interests in this region, because a big key US issue here is also freedom of navigation.
Yep.
In the South China Sea.
All those lines in the South China Sea.
Absolutely. So do let us know what you think about this. We're about to head into some messages and then taking a look at what's happening in local news next. Be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Cardigans with Erase Rewind. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. So we are taking a look at the front pages of our newspapers and portals this morning, because lots to discuss in our local news. Noel, you've got the New Straits Times in front of you. What's on the front page there?
Well, this is a beautiful picture of our Prime Minister making his trip to Saudi Arabia, and NSD has described it as a landmark visit. I believe a reporter may have followed him for this trip. Anyway, so the big news really, I guess, the Prime Minister has made a request to increase the Hajj quota from the current 31,600 passes, simply because our Malaysian population has grown, right, to about 31.95 million people. And also another story here, on the vaccine, COVID-19. So I think the government is mulling issuing exemption certificates for those who are unable to be vaccinated against COVID-19 due to health reasons. And I think that's a very sensible thing to do, because, a person like that might still need to, travel, for example.
Absolutely. And I have the Star in front of me. So their headline here is Up in the Air. And it's not immediately apparent from the headline what it's talking about, but actually they are looking at the work that the Election Commission is doing. So they are all ready, and I quote, for the massive work of creating an automatic voter registration system, which is good to hear. But of course, the fact is that the attempts to lower the voting age to 18 is also what's really up in the air here. because some legislative hurdles have rendered it still a little bit of a question mark whether 18-year-olds will be able to vote by the time GE15 rolls around. Roshan, you've got the Malaysian Reserve. What are we looking at there?
The Malaysian Reserve went with the headline, retailers continue to bleed. And basically the bottom story here is the retail industry is suffering and that at least 51,000 more retail stores are expected to close down as soon as the pandemic pandemic continues to batter businesses. And the Malaysian Reserve spoke to Retail Group Malaysia's MD Tan Hai Sin, and he said that the number of outlets facing closure represents 15% of the total retail stores nationwide. In fact, I think he was on BFM News throughout the day yesterday talking. Clips of him were being played with news. There is an interesting story here, though. On page 7 of the Malaysian Reserve, the government establishes Housing Corp under KPKT. So the National Housing Corporation, as it's called, the NHC, is supposed to coordinate all housing development agencies under the Ministry of Housing and Local Government. So Dato' Zuraida Kamarudin said for a start, three housing agencies covering one Malaysia's basically Prima, the National Housing Department and Syarikat Perumahan Negara will be coordinated under the NHC. And it's essentially adding out that the focus of this agency or this corporation is to carry out research and strategic planning in terms of centralizing the housing database in order to overcome the problem of mismatch between supply and demand, especially for affordable housing, whether public or private. Now, I remember, was it a few years back, 2-3 years ago, one of the commentators we speak to, Carmelo Felito, came out with a paper or a report at that time that there were 20 agencies involved in, or there are some number of that involved in affordable housing, building of affordable housing, which then leads to the fragmentation and the inability to build housing where it's needed. And also add into that the complications with states' rights over land that makes developing housing quite difficult from a federal perspective. So this is an interesting move. I hope it works out because Lord knows that this is an important part, right? Housing and affordability of housing in this country. But I wonder whether the fragmentation will be able to, whether this will be able to overcome the fragmentation. Very quickly on page three of the Malaysian Reserve, we've got Dato' Sri Tajuddin Abdul Rahman, who's basically saying that if UMNO goes partners with PAS and Bersatu in the next election, they will have to settle with PAS, they'll have to settle with 96 seats, but if they go on their own, they'll contest 120 seats, and basically just alluding to they're ready to go at this alone. That's what they're ready to do. And lastly, on Malaysia Kini, we've got news that Tenaga Nita Director Agel Fernandez passed away yesterday at age 72, which is actually really quite sad considering the amount of work she's done and all the changes, all the impact she's had in the field for the last, I can't remember how many years.
Yes, that was very tragic news indeed. I think we got that yesterday. So condolences to her family and friends as well. Just very quickly, looking at the lead story in the Malay Mail, which is something that's definitely worth highlighting. UNICEF Malaysia highlighted that child marriage likely rose during the COVID-19 pandemic. And this is because schools were closed, the economy worsened, so vulnerable children likely found themselves on the wrong end of the marriage stick here, which is this is another tragic element that we try to keep a close watch on, but unfortunately with the existing exemptions that we have in our legislation, we do see about an average of 1,500 children from various religions and ethnicities and communities marrying each year. So whether or not this is going to be something the government will address going forward or in any kind of timely manner is yet to be seen. But right now we're about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin and then more business news and analysis coming your way. But first, here is Bad Reputation by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.